This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Do you remember going out into the country as a child and looking up at the night sky and being bowled over by the star field? It was easy to see why your ancestors turned to the night sky for spirituality and even entertainment. But recently I was in South Texas in the Eagle Ford Shale area, and I looked up at the skies hoping to see that beautiful star field, but it was missing. Even in the rural areas, light pollution is washing out those stars. What does this mean for nature and our own health and sanity? Do you miss the stars? Do you support a movement to save the stars with some smart lighting choices? Call in. We want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org. And you can write directly on our show page on the website at tpr.org. Our guest this half hour is Bill Wrenn. He is a special assistant to the director of the McDonald Observatory in West Texas, and Paul Bogart, author of The End of Night, Searching for Natural Darkness in the Age of Artificial Light. Welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
So, Paul, let me ask you, when we to bring back the night sky and the stars, does that mean we got to get rid of our lights?
Well, sometimes not having the lights on is the best choice, but I think that it doesn't mean we get rid of our lights. I think we're going to have lighting. We like lighting. Lighting can be helpful to us. It's just, how are we going to use that light? Right now we're using way more of it than we need to, and we're using it in ways that are dangerous for us, that get in the way of our safety. And we can have all the light that we really need at night and do things like bring back the stars and make us make ourselves a little more safe.
And Bill Wrenn over at the McDonald Observatory, how is light pollution impacting the work done there?
Well, we enjoy the darkest night skies of any major observatory in North America, certainly, and perhaps the world. But it is the sky is not getting any darker. We've got a lot of energy production moving out of the Permian Basin down toward the Davis Mountains, where the observatory is located, and we can see the sky glow to our north and northeast, and if the sky gets too bright, we won't be able to see the faint, distant objects that we're trying to study.
So, I mean, you have these huge lenses and refractors, and you're trying to gather up as much light from outer space as you can from here, grounded to the Earth. But if you've got all these lights around you, then those things just get washed out?
That's true, yeah. We're in the process of upgrading our largest telescope, the Hobby Ebley Telescope, the HET. It's a 10-meter aperture telescope, largest in North America, among four 10-meter telescopes in the world. And we're trying to study galaxies, objects out toward the edge of the observable universe, some 10, 12 billion light years away. We're often talking about just collecting a few photons at a time, very faint, distant objects. And if the sky gets brighter than the faint objects we're trying to look at, we're out of luck.
Paul, are we able to put a number or somehow categorize how much we've lost?
I think that's really tough. I mean, I think that that's part of the reason that we're probably losing the night sky is that it isn't always quantifiable, and the things that we're losing are the intangible qualities, like being able to walk out your front door and see the universe spread overhead, which was, you know, for most of human history, one of the most common human experiences, and now it's become one of the most rare of human experiences. So you can quantify things like the amount of energy wasted, and we can talk about the human health effects of all this light at night, but in the end, I think it does come down to things that it's a little harder to put a number next to.
So if we really wanted to take this on and eliminate all this light pollution, what would it mean? What trade-offs would there be, Paul?
I don't know. I mean, I think that, you know, we have a great opportunity coming down the road towards us, which is the coming of LED lighting, which is, if it hasn't reached the places you live yet. It will pretty soon. And the reason for that is that folks are moving toward LEDs to save energy, and which is fantastic. LEDs also present the opportunity to be much more programmable and much more directional. That is, light will only go down toward the ground rather than up into the sky or into people's bedrooms and that kind of thing. But LEDs also present some peril in the sense that we might just use more of them. We have this habit of when we become more efficient, we just tend to use more.
More is better.
Right, exactly. And that's certainly true with light. People think that ever more light will make us ever safer, which is really counterintuitive. If you look at an increasingly bright light, it becomes harder and harder to see. So we don't need more light. We just need more thoughtful, intelligent, and responsible light.
Our phone lines are open if you want to join the conversation talking about the end of night, how there's so much light pollution with artificial light in our society. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Raul has called in. Raul, welcome to The Source.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
No, my comment is that only a few years ago, back in 88, 89, down there at off Southern Road and 410 off of South Presa, they had a place called Alcohol Rehabilitation Center, and we could go out there at night and gaze at the stars. It was pretty neat, you know, but that's all gone since they built the some detention center there. And then also not to mention all the drilling that's going on in South Texas with a bunch of lights and stuff. So, you know, I guess we're missing out on the stars now.
Right, Raul. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate that. So he talks about, you put up a detention center, you've got lighting. It's going to be flooded with lighting. But do you really need all of that light? Is that something that can be controlled, Bill?
Yeah, it's something that can and should be controlled. Thomas Edison was a great salesman. Paul points out, you know, the common wisdom is the brighter the better, the more light the better. But in fact, if you have a bright light source shining in your eye, the glare makes it harder to see. I think the most important thing to get across here is that this is not an anti-light campaign. We're not trying to pull the plug and leave people in the dark unable to see at night. It's simply a matter of putting the light where you want it to go. In fact, this whole issue would really go away overnight, if you'll forgive me, if everyone would simply keep their own light on their own property, if the light would just remain on the property of origin. That would essentially take care of things. As long as it's not overly bright, reflecting off the ground, and not too harsh in terms of color, bluish light, then go ahead.
And you can. And we're going to go to break right now. We're going to continue talking about night, dark sky, in the dark sky community, something that's happening in Dripping Springs tomorrow. We invite you to join the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Dripping Springs, just up the road from San Antonio, is the first city in Texas to be designated as an official dark sky community. And tomorrow night, they're going to play host to the International Dark Sky Association Annual Conference, the Better Lights for Better Nights Symposium. And there's more information on that. The Dripping Springs Ranch Park Event Center is going to hold that event, and that is from 11 a.m. tomorrow. So, and we're told Dripping Springs, they passed ordinances to control light. A lot of cities have. San Antonio has as well, mainly because of concerns about our military post and trying to make sure that they're dark enough. So we are seeing some activity, Bill, from cities taking the lead.
Yes, indeed. There are literally hundreds of cities around the country and more around the world that have adopted lighting ordinances. Military concerns for nighttime training exercises and so on, being able to have a dark environment is one thing, but cities are also very interested in saving on their electricity bill. So the adoption of the LED is a natural, as long as the light is put into a fixture that directs the light down and to the sides where you need it. I might point out also in San Antonio, there's an excellent example of very good dark sky friendly lighting along Interstate 10 near Camp Bolas. I believe it's called the Rim, a big shopping center. It's got to be stretched 3 miles long there that you can see by the freeway as you're driving through. That is an excellent example of lighting well done.
It shows you that you can have the lighting for gas stations and what have you, sporting events, but it doesn't have to be blasted into the sky and eliminate, you know, what you're trying to do over at the McDonald Observatory.
Correct.
Okay, let's get a caller on the line. Brian has called in. Brian, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask your guest. I'm a big supporter of the Dark Skies Initiative around Camp Bullis and in other parts of the country. But what type of incentives can you give cities and communities to implement these more light-friendly or dark sky-friendly lights?
Good question, Brian. Thanks for calling in. So, Paul Bogart, author of The End of Night, can you answer that?
Well, I think Bill was just touching on the biggest incentive, which is the cost savings that can be realized, especially with the coming of LEDs. You know, we waste a lot of light, a lot of energy, a lot of money at night that does no good. You know, the light that's going up into the sky that's robbing Bill and his colleagues of being able to see the night sky and all of us of being able to see the night sky is not doing anyone any good. And so if we can just get that light to be focused downward, that's all we're really asking here. And I think beyond the immediate energy savings, we can start talking about the human health effects of too much light at night and some of the safety effects of too much light at night as well. It's, you know, when we talk to cities about these issues, oftentimes talking about the beauty of the night sky is kind of the fourth or fifth thing that we might talk about because people, they appreciate the beauty of the night sky, but it's not something that moves them the way that saving money and cutting waste and saving, protecting their kids' health really moves them.
Paul, tell me more about the impact on health. What is the connection there?
But what we're finding out is that you know, the human body has not evolved to be exposed to all this artificial light at night. And the researchers told me when I was working on the book that, you know, three primary ways. One, we're disrupting sleep, our sleep patterns, and contributing to sleep disorders, which are tied to every major disease that we're dealing with. Number two, we are confusing our circadian rhythms, those internal rhythms that orchestrate our body's health. And then number three, and maybe most troubling, is that we are disrupting the production of the hormone melatonin, which is only produced in the dark. So, and the lack of melatonin in the bloodstream has been linked to an increased risk for breast and prostate cancer. And it's getting to the point now that the World Health Organization considers working the night shift a probable carcinogen, akin to breathing diesel fumes. So it's not a good thing to be exposed to all of this artificial light at night.
Back to the phone lines. Fran has called in. Fran, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Lighting ordinances are no good if they're not enforced. San Antonio and CPS would even get serious about putting in full cutoff streetlights, and the city certainly doesn't cite light pollution from businesses and homes, although the UDC does cover those things.
Okay, so the city is not enforcing the ordinance. What are they not enforcing? What can change there?
I don't believe there's a nighttime code enforcement officer to do it, but even when there are complaints, how often have you heard of the lighting ordinances of the city of San Antonio being enforced?
Okay, Fran, thank you for that. I appreciate your calling in, and I'm going to check up on that. So, I mean, enforcement, that's a big part of what we're talking about, Bill. Over at the McDonald Observatory, I'm sure you can say people can pass ordinances all day long, but if it doesn't actually change behavior and patterns, then it's no good.
Yeah, that's true. Enforcement is very difficult when it comes to outdoor lighting. There are certainly things which take much higher priority. I like to look at lighting ordinances as a great vehicle for education and raising people's awareness about this issue. It's not a technical problem. The hardware is out there to light well. Again, the example of the Rim Shopping Center. You can buy good lighting hardware off the shelves. It's just a matter of, the lighting ordinances act as a great opportunity simply to get the issue out in front of the public and raise awareness. It's not something that's ordinarily on people's radar screen.
Back to the phones. Stephen is on the line. Stephen, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to mention that being an architect, I specify dark sky fixtures as often as I can. And it's very easy to talk to clients about these, and they're pretty much in agreement. And so it's not like we're reinventing the wheel or coming up with something really bizarre. These are things that are off the shelf right now, and we can save energy, use motion detectors and all sorts of other things that can apply light only where needed and when needed.
Do you have to do special recessed light fixtures that would involve extra expense?
Not really. The fixtures that you can pick, the Dark Sky Association has actually tested a lot of fixtures already to say, well, this one passes or this one doesn't. And it's usually the shape of the fixture itself that pretty much focuses the light downward. And we have to be careful, too, as far as what kind of reflective surface it bounces onto. Other than that, I think ordinances should be in place, you know, as far as, you know, lighting up car dealerships at night, billboards after 10 p.m., all sorts of other things are just blasting away that shouldn't be on.
Stephen, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. So, Paul Bogard, what about these dusk to dawn meters? What does that do?
The dusk to dawn, well, are you talking about, I'm not quite sure what you're talking about, sorry.
Oh, I've heard that there's a way you can, you know, have certain technology that will adjust the lighting as needed. So if no one's there, or if it knows when to come on and when not to come on, and how bright to shine.
Exactly. Sure. So this is with the coming of LEDs. This is a great opportunity because LEDs are highly programmable, and we can set them up so that you know, after a certain hour, maybe they're dimmed a little bit, or maybe they even go off. We have kind of the mindset now of one size fits all when it comes to lighting. And so the lights that are very bright at, 8 o'clock on a winter's evening when people are out and about are equally bright at, 3:30 in the morning when no one is out and about. And that, again, is wasted light, wasted energy, and oftentimes just getting in the way of the beautiful night sky.
So you get a really great view of the beautiful night sky in West Texas at the McDonald Observatory, Bill Wren. I miss it. And not being able to look up at night and be able to see at least the Big Dipper. I mean, you see a couple of planets, but nothing stark and amazing. How do we get people to demand that they want to reclaim that?
Well, they have to be aware that they're losing something first. Those of us who were fortunate enough to grow up in the country and grew up with the stars. For me, it was kind of like wallpaper. I guess I took it for granted being able to go outside at night and look up and see the stars. And then I moved to Houston for a number of years, and it was kind of like scratching my head, what's going on here? But these days, though, we are, people are born and live and are raised in and near our major population centers. We're raising generations of people who have never seen a naturally dark nighttime sky. I can cite literally hundreds of incidents working public star parties at the McDonald Observatory where people are just dumbfounded by the sight of the Milky Way and just the thousands of stars horizon to horizon that they've simply never seen. They may be in their 30s and 40s and seeing a star-filled sky for the first time.
So, Paul, is this equipment exotic? Is it hard to get? Will I find it at my local big box store?
Well, in terms of, people are often asking me, what can I do? And one of the things you can do is to make sure the lights on your own house are not contributing to the problem. And the answer there is yes. You can go to your local home improvement store and look for fixtures that are, maybe they're called dark sky friendly, or I know that Lowe's has a line called Good Neighbor Lighting. That you can buy, and just make sure that your light is pointed down or that you turn the lights off when you go to sleep. And I think this title of good neighbor really speaks to one of the ideas that Bill and I are talking about here, that, light that's going in all directions isn't helping us, it's not making us any safer, And it's also...
Well, what do you mean by that? It's not making people safer.
Sure. We have the sort of mistaken idea that light makes us safe alone, and light really doesn't make us safe alone. Safety comes from all sorts of different contributions. And when
if your house is dark and, you know, mm-hmm. creepy and people can sneak up on you, that's not good.
Right. Well, that's the general understanding. But in fact, that's not always how it works. A lot of the folks that I talk to who think about this a lot will say that, you know, light actually, that criminals will actually like it when you light up your house, because then they can see what they want to get and where they're going to go. When it's dark, they don't like that either. I was told more than once, you know, criminals are as afraid of the dark as we are. So this notion that light, because some light helps make us safe, ever more light will make us ever safer, doesn't really hold up.
I want to remind people about what's happening at Dripping Springs tomorrow night. They're going to have the official Dark Sky community playing host there for the International Dark Sky Association annual conference, Better Lights for Better Nights. They're going to feature presentations from environmental activists and legal experts and lighting designers, and someone from the McDonald Observatory is going to be there as well. So there's talking about what can be done, and Dripping Springs apparently is leading the way. And our two guests this half hour, Bill Wren, a special assistant to the director of the McDonald Observatory in West Texas, and Paul Bogart, author of The End of Night, Searching for Natural Darkness in the Age of Artificial Light. Thank you both of you for coming on the air and telling us about this.
Thank you very much.
When we come back from the NPR and local news break, we're going to be talking about, are you too connected to your social media and your phone and your digital devices? Are you alone with your thoughts? Have you ever alone with your thoughts anymore? That's coming up on The Source. Stay tuned.